This is the Leadership 360 podcast, where each month we have an inspiring conversation with a fellow leader aimed at enhancing your skills and faith in all areas of your life. While our podcast is designed for Seventh-day Adventist Church leaders in the Texas Conference, we invite leaders from all over to join us in this journey. Welcome to Leadership 360. All right. I'm so excited to have a guy I've been looking forward to interview. And not only because he's a great colleague, but because he's a longtime friend. Brian Jagerp is our property development manager here at the Texas Conference. True story. I was the one that kind of put coming to work at the conference, not this particular job, coming to work at the conference on your radar screen at a graduation party that we just happened to both be at. I had left Arlington, and so you were a longtime member of mine in Arlington. How long have you guys have been here in DFW?
In the DFW area, we've been here, I want to say, going on 8 or 9 years.
Wow. Yep. That has gone by very, very quickly. I remember you guys moved into town. So talk a little bit. Talk a little bit about your family, and then I want to talk about the journey that got you to property development manager at the Texas Conference.
So my family, I'm happily married to my wife Vanessa.
The best part of the Jagger family.
Yes, yes, she is. you know, been married 25 years. Wow. Our son is 20 or 21. Now I forgot. But he's currently studying at Walla Walla Mechanical Engineering. Our first daughter, Bella, is a senior at Burton Adventist Academy. And our last daughter, Jania, is she's going to be a junior next year at Burton.
Man, so those kids have grown up because I've literally seen them grow up.
Yes.
You know, Jaden is much taller than either of us.
Yes, he is.
And, you know, the girls are amazing young ladies. And so you have a great family, you have a beautiful wife. Thank you, Tom. So how did you end up becoming the property development? What's your background?
So my background is I do have a bachelor's degree in accounting.
Okay.
So I do have an accounting background. But for the past 7, 8 years, I've worked for engineering firms. And with working with them, I've worked on a lot of public projects,
you know,
state projects, roads, highways, buildings, you know, different types of infrastructure and stuff like that. So with that experience as a project manager, as a project accountant, it has kind of given me the insight I need to get more acquainted with construction, to get more acquainted with how contracts are written up and what to look for in developing.
Okay. So how does that, so this property development manager, I want to get it right. What does that entail? What does that even mean? And why do we need that here at the Texas Conference?
Tom, it entails a lot. That's like a loaded question.
That is a loaded question. I don't know. I've known a number of your predecessors, and it's a loaded question.
Yes, it is. But it does entail, you know, pretty much anything to do with any of the properties the Texas Conference owns. Of course, you know, they own the ranch. They own office buildings, our office building. They own academies, you know, regular schools and churches.
Right.
And other types of buildings as well.
So just to remind our listeners, we had Lynette on last season talking about that idea of that the Texas Conference Association is the property holder for any of the churches or schools or office building for the Texas Conference. No local church owns their own building that's affiliated with us.
That is correct.
So you're responsible for all of those things, all of those properties.
All 320, I think, last time I checked.
Yeah. You have a little counter in your office. It's like, sold it, bought it, sold it. Okay. So day to day, what does that look like?
So day to day, you know, we deal a lot of work with a lot of different churches on whether or not they should purchase a property if they're interested. You know, purchases, sales, leases, construction. Okay. You know, whether it's new building or wanting to purchase land itself, you know, and what the guidelines and requirements are. The guidelines and requirements are set by the association board.
Okay.
So
even beyond just those properties that we own, you deal with the churches that are renting property from other entities, other churches or mm-hmm. office buildings or whatever. So you help take care of kind of the contracts and the leases to make sure that everything.
Exactly.
Okay.
So whether we're leasing from another entity or we're leasing to another entity. So there is.
Oh, okay.
There's leases both ways. You know,
gotcha.
Make sure that they have liability insurance, make sure that they're in compliance with the city or the county, whatever jurisdiction that they're in. So it does take a lot. And I'm very grateful for the team that I have. You know, I do have a great support team, and I appreciate them very much as well.
You've got Claudia and
Sophia.
That are amazing at what they do. They make you look good.
Yes, they do.
They do. I'll admit that publicly. They make you look good. So let's talk a little bit about some of those different areas, because mm-hmm. I know, you know, our listeners out there are leaders in the local churches. Mm-hmm. Let's say a church maybe is renting. Let's use that as the example. Is
okay.
renting, and they're like, you know what? We really want to have our own building. Renting mm-hmm. kind of keeps us from really doing the ministry in the community that we want to do. And so the church says, okay, we want to buy a piece of property. What does that process look like? And it could be the $35,000. You don't need to get into to mm-hmm. all the details. But a church calls you up and says, Brian, we're in Houston. We want to buy a property. What's the process look like?
So first thing is, you know, I have a discussion with the pastor or the board, finding out, okay, what is the mission of the church? Are they more community-driven, you know, giving back to the community? Are they more youth-driven?
Okay.
You support the youths for the Pathfinders, Adventures, the different clubs. You know, so whatever their purpose is or their main goal is to help them find a property that's suitable for them. You know, a lot of them go out and they find their own properties, which is fine, but then, of course, we need to look at everything.
Gotcha.
You know, first of all, the main thing is, since we're dealing with churches, we have to include a commercial contractor. I mean, a commercial realtor,
okay.
not just a residential
not just okay.
realtor.
That's important to know.
It is because a lot of churches feel, oh yeah, well, Sister So and So is a member of our church and she's a realtor. There is a difference between, you know, looking at working with a commercial realtor and working with a residential realtor, because there's a lot of information on the property itself that we need to obtain in order to make a decision. So a commercial realtor will be able to get that
gotcha.
Quicker than a residential realtor would.
So now all of a sudden they identify a piece of property. Hey, mm-hmm. we want this. Working with this commercial realtor, is it now, okay, we can buy it. What is that? I mean, what is that little,
so,
you know?
So the buying process is, of course, based on the requirements by the association board.
Okay.
You know, the church need to have at least, we go based on 3x tithe to take
okay.
to take out a loan.
Gotcha.
From
so 3x tithe is what you're allowed to borrow
correct.
From the revolving fund. Okay.
From the revolving fund. They must have cash on hand or a building fund that's, you know, specific just for either repairs or, for instance, if they want to purchase
okay.
a building or property, you know, they set these funds or they do a fundraiser or whatever it is. So they must have at least, I forget what the percentage is, but
they have to have some money on hand. They just
yeah.
can't go in.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. You know, so a next thing too is one of the requirements is at least 3 acres of property. If
really?
You're looking for vacant land.
Okay.
If you're looking at a church building, it's going to be hard to find one that has 3 acres
right.
on it. But the reason why 3 acres is kind of a standard is sometimes on properties, there's easements, there's setbacks, there's other things
right.
that would prevent the church from developing the property the way that they want to.
Right, okay.
Now, a lot of churches have come back and say, well, we can't afford a three-acre piece of lot. Well, let's work with how much members you have, and then
right.
we can, you know, look at a standard that's used in the market.
Okay.
You know, based on the size of the congregation, we can look at the We can look at the acreage on
Okay, gotcha.
So we work with churches, but there is a standard that we work with from the association that we need to adhere to. And we also have checklists.
Okay.
Our department also have different checklists. If you're purchasing, there's one for purchasing,
okay,
selling, purchasing land, or purchasing property.
So there is a process. A church is not going into this blind. They know as they communicate with you, and I think that's probably the most important thing to kind of let our leaders know is communication with the conference is key.
It is.
Which we'll get to it in a couple minutes, but I've also recognized within Texas that, you know, sometimes in other places, not just here, that churches kind of want to do their own thing, and it's like, okay, the conference,
yes,
we'll ask forgiveness, not permission, and so communication is key.
Yes,
because I'm guessing we've gotten ourselves into some messes.
We sure have gotten ourselves,
which is why. Water. So then, once they are able, they've got the money, they're able to get the loan. Then it's just a matter of finishing, drying up the offer and the contract. Correct. And all that is done by us and on our side and in conjunction with the realtor.
Yes. So during that process, there is what is called a feasibility period.
Oh, okay.
And that feasibility period is, we try to keep it at 60 days as a minimum.
Okay.
And during that time, it gives the church an opportunity to do their inspections, their surveys, their phase one studies, whatever it is that's needed to make sure that that building or that property that they're purchasing can be developed, can be utilized as a church building.
Gotcha. If
that's what it is. Or if it's a piece of property that they want to develop, making sure that the soil is not contaminated, making sure there is no restrictions on the title or the deed that would prevent a church from being developed there.
Okay, because there are HOA restrictions. You know, yes, there's all kind of stuff.
Correct.
And then at the end, you sign off on everything, we get the checklist. Then the church is able to purchase the association on behalf of the church.
Yes,
is able to do that. So let's talk opposite. Because this is where you know some churches get a little bit confused.
Okay,
so they take a loan out, they put their money in it, they pay the mortgage every month, all of that kind of stuff, and then all of a sudden, for whatever reason, maybe let's say they outgrow the church.
Right.
I know there's a church here in DFW that has outgrown their building, and they're what does the process of selling look like, and does the conference keep all the money because it's our building?
So the process, I'm going to start with the process, right?
Okay.
The process is if the congregation has outgrown the building, the first step would be to get the listing agent, more or less a commercial realtor again.
Okay, sure.
Right? Work with that realtor to list the property. Of course, there is anything that the conference do, we need minutes from the church board or the church in business meeting. You know, we get those minutes, hey, the church have agreed, we've outgrown our building, the church have agreed to sell our current location. Okay, let's get with the commercial realtor, let's find out what market value is, and then we'll list it for this amount. Now, any transactions, purchase or sales goes before the association board and they approve.
Okay.
They make the final approval.
Gotcha.
On everything. But of course, those approvals have to be written in the minutes
from the local church itself. Gotcha.
So once the property is listed, you know that same realtor can work on looking for another property for the church.
Okay, gotcha.
So whether it's a piece of vacant land or if it's an actual another building, then that process moves forward. Now, if for whatever reason the church hasn't been sold yet, but it's up on the market, and they come across a vacant land or a building that they would like to purchase, the conference will do a bridge loan.
Oh, okay. Oh,
so
nice.
So they will do a bridge loan, you know, and once that building, that property or building that they want to purchase is purchased, and then that bridge loan is now in effect, whatever monies that the other building is sold for, the current building, then goes to cover that bridge loan.
Okay.
So we have in the past where, so that's kind of the process for that.
So the proceeds. So let's say, for example, they're not buying another building. You know, I've had to close churches down in my ministry.
Okay.
You know, all of a sudden the building sold. We get a check. Mm-hmm. It goes to the conference association because that's who owns the property.
Yes.
Does the conference association keep it? Did the church member? How is that money distributed, or what happens to it?
Okay, so that money, once the property is sold, if the congregation is dissolved, or what's the right word for that? I forgot.
Yeah, disbanded.
Disbanded, yeah, correct. If the property is disbanded, the monies are kept here.
Okay.
And then the association decide, okay, are we going to hold a portion of it if in case, you know, we can distribute a portion to education, we can distribute a portion to whatever it is. But sometimes it's held in a trust, or it's held at the union.
Right.
Where if another group do come about, let's say a year or 2 years later, in that same location, and say, "Hey, we'd like to purchase a church or start a church here," those funds would go to that group.
Does the local church have any say when they disband? Hey, we would love this to go toward education, or we'd love to go toward X, Y, or Z, or
I'm not sure if they have a say in
it.
I'm not quite sure. Now, if the church is still an active church, that they sold their building,
right,
and they're currently renting because they can't afford another building or another property, that money is kept here.
Oh, okay.
Until they find something else that they would like to purchase.
Okay.
Then that money is then given to them, and then they move forward with their purchase.
Okay. So they're able to. Okay. So mm-hmm. So the conference really does hold it in trust, in the sense that
they do.
You know, whatever the church decides to do, mm-hmm. they're able to get access to that money for another piece of property, or for another purpose.
Correct.
Down the road, mm-hmm. maybe another church. You not only oversee it, it'd be crazy enough if you just oversaw purchases and sales.
Mm-hmm.
But you also oversee renovations.
Renovations and construction.
What does so now church, okay? They don't want to sell their building. They want to add on to the building.
Correct.
You know, we Arlington added on, you know.
That is true.
You know, a number of years ago, 2017, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
What does that process look like for the conference? How involved are you when it comes to churches renovating, adding on, whatever they decide to do?
So the conference has to be really involved. And the reason being is that any renovation or construction, we're bringing in third parties.
Okay.
We're bringing in contractors. Right. We're bringing in, you know, general managers. We're bringing in a whole slew of people that is not too familiar with the way processes work. Excuse me. Now, even though the conference is supposed to be deeply involved, a lot of churches don't involve the conference, right? Which is not supposed to.
Ask forgiveness, then permission. Sure.
Correct.
Well, I'm going to talk about that in a second.
But anyway, so that process is getting a contractor, a trusted contractor the church is familiar with. It could be a contractor that they've worked with in the past.
Okay.
Or if it's something new that, you know, let's say, okay, we just have a contractor that does maintenance.
Right.
You know, if that contractor is not familiar with developing a whole building, then you need to find someone else. But if you want to develop an addition or whatever it is, one of the first steps is to get an architect.
Okay.
Now, we have the opportunity to work with our legal firm, Harrison & Steck. And one of the benefits of working with them is they vet our architects, engineers, and contractors for us if we need them to.
Okay.
You know, so the first thing is to get an architect to do a drawing, see, you know, hey, this is what we would like. The architect put it together.
So the church, so let's pause there for a second just so that I understand and our listeners understand. So the church has input into the contractor, the architect. The conference doesn't say, you're working with this contractor, you're working with this architect, you're working with this engineering firm. The conference has some say, and obviously you have this firm that vets. but it, the local church has some say as well in terms of, like you said, of people they work with. And I want people to understand that is that we're not overlords in terms of you have to work with, you know,
correct,
this firm. And
that is true. And yes, the local church do have a say. We do recommend anytime we're looking for any of these third party individuals or companies to get three bids.
Okay.
Yes. So that's kind of the guideline that we have. Okay. Is three bids, you know, you get architects, okay, with three bids from architects, gotcha, three bids from engineers, whatever it is. So three bids, then the board decides, okay, you know, we've looked at the bids, you know, we've decided to go with company B.
Okay.
You know, now during that process, if they need us to help them out, we will do that as well. You know, but if they have the knowledge, okay, they say, okay, well, we've worked with this architect in the past, we've seen his work, you know, we've done reviews or we've looked at his reviews and everything looks, we'll go with this one.
Gotcha.
He still, that company still have to be vetted and all of that,
right,
stuff. And then once they finalize an architect, an engineer, contractor, once we get the proposals from them, the next step is to submit that proposal to the attorney, our attorney, and then they drop a contract based on that proposal.
Gotcha. Okay, gotcha. So I'm going to get in the weeds here for a minute, and part of it is because I was involved in the annex at Arlington.
Yeah.
Do you prefer having independent architect, engineering firm, and contractor, or do you like the design build where it's kind of all under one umbrella? Mm-hmm. What's the preference of the conference? Or maybe the conference don't have one. I'm putting you on the spot.
So the preference is the design bid build, which is independent architect, engineer, and contractor.
Okay, gotcha.
So so you have the build. You have the one that is, no, I forgot the name. the design build. Right? You'd work... The way the design build works is you work directly with the contractor.
Right.
So the architect works for the contractor.
Right.
Now, the disadvantage to that is if the architect works for the contractor, they can go in and put in whatever they want and no one is held liable.
Right.
If you have an independent architect, when they visit the job site and they say, well, these plumbing pipes are not supposed to be there, why is it here? You know, then they're held accountable.
Gotcha.
The engineer or the engineer and the contractor held liable to making sure it's done properly. That's one of the benefits to having the design bid built.
Gotcha.
So we kind of shy away from the design build concept, but I notice a lot of churches are trying to go that route because it is cheaper.
Right.
But it's not always the best option.
Yeah, we got the, I'll get us out of the weeds now, because like I said, there are advantages and disadvantages to that. And so talk for 2 seconds, because there's a lot of other things I want to talk about. You've also been involved with the renovations and the expansion of Lake Whitney Ranch.
Correct.
What has that been like? I mean, it is such a different animal than any other, you know, not building a church, not building. Mm-hmm. What's the experience been like with Lake Whitney?
It has been a very time-consuming experience.
I'm sure.
You know, lots of meetings, sure, meeting with architects, meeting with the engineers. And it is a good experience because you get to see things from the ground up.
Right.
You know, things under the dirt, the soil testing, the concrete slab and everything that goes underneath it, and then to see the finished product.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, wow, this is actually a reality now, you know, and it's like, huh. And people get to enjoy it, you know, and appreciate what we're doing as a conference to grow Lake Whitney.
Right.
So it is a good experience.
Lots of meetings, though.
Yeah, lots of meetings, you know, get to meet a lot of interesting people, you know, so it's good.
And you get
it's
to
good.
Drive back and forth to Clifton.
Yes, the hour drive from the office.
Though I will say, and I'll give Hector a shout out, Hector Perez and Abel Perez, who are the director and the co-director of Lake Whitney Ranch, have been amazing at, you know, being, Mari Escobar is another one that's on site. All three of them are on site at the ranch. And I think, you know, Hector's been so involved with the expansion of Lake Whitney Ranch.
Yes. He has been very key in that, and I really appreciate Hector. I appreciate Mario and Annabelle, because they put in a lot of hours, put in a lot of work.
They really do
to maintain and upkeep upkeep the property.
And it's a great facility.
Yes, it is.
So there may be some leaders out there going, okay, they're in Alvarado, we're in, you know, Houston, or we're in San Antonio, we're in the Valley, we're in East. What they don't know doesn't hurt them. We got a contractor, you know, longtime member in our church. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, look at this checklist. There's so many things on this. We don't need to do this. We don't need to do this. Some people may say, look, all of these regulations, all of these guidelines mm-hmm. are overkill. Can't we just do what we want to do and talk to the conference later? What?
So the issue with that is I've come across a couple projects where when the city walked in, they're like, do you guys have a permit? Oh, we didn't know we needed a permit. I'm like, what do you mean? You guys are putting up a whole building. What do you mean you don't need a permit? And of course, with the association being the owners, they cannot go ahead and pull a permit for themselves.
Right.
They need to come to us and get the permission. So the key is get the conference involved from the beginning. If it's going to be a project, we do. If it's going to be a construction project or an addition or renovation, or if it's a renovation that doesn't entail major changes to the actual building, then you know it's minimal effect on the church.
Right. But we still need
to let us know what's going on. But anytime there's a construction project or something like that going on, it is important to get the church involved, because we also work with a construction consultant group called the Roberts Group.
Okay.
A very knowledgeable set of individuals. And, you know, they have give us a lot of direction in the past and currently on projects that they actually was real key also at the Lake Whitney Ranch buildings that went up there. So, I mean, yes, it may seem as overkill, but, you know, working with legal, working with consultants, you know, is for the benefit of the church.
Sure.
Because many times we've run into the issue where churches go ahead and start a project, and then when the city come out, they're out of code compliance. They can't obtain a certificate of occupancy.
Right.
So they just put up this nice, beautiful building and they can't occupy it.
Or they have put up a building that, like you said, is out of code compliance. You have to tear it down, renovate the renovation because it's not within in code compliance.
Correct.
And, you know, I recognizing having been in the local church, it can be challenging. You want to get stuff done.
That is true.
Time is money, especially in the construction industry.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, at least having some communication with the conference, following the guidelines are there for a purpose.
It is.
You're not sitting there going, okay, let's make this as hard as possible on the local church.
Right. Our goal is
my sense is, too, that you don't want to, one of us who works here, drive up to a church and go, wow, they have a new addition and we had no idea. Because some of that has to do with insurance, right?
Yes.
Because then once the building is built or the renovation is done, then risk management has to come in and make sure the insurance.
Correct. You know, because we work really close hand in hand with Pastor Rojas and Teresa, who is our risk management team here.
Right.
You know, especially if there's a claim, you know, a storm pastor or something. We've had issues in the past where, we didn't know this building was on the property. Yeah, well, it just got burned on yesterday. Well, I'm sorry, we can't.
You can't cover it.
You know? And then the church gets upset.
Right.
But we send them the ARM sends them the policy every year to review, and some of them don't take the time to do it.
Gotcha.
You know, so that's the sad part about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I want to end this segment on a happy note. What is your favorite part of the job? I mean, there's always something going on. I would sense that. I've not been in your office in probably a couple of weeks. I think you have a whiteboard on your on your wall with a lot of writing on it. So you have balls in the air all the time. Churches, constantly. Selling, buying. Mm-hmm. There's never any doubt. But what is your favorite part of the job?
My favorite part of the job is to see when a project is accomplished. You know, whether it's a sale, a purchase, a construction project, whatever it is, you know, one of my greatest joys, of course, is the pavilion at Lake Whitney, because that took a lot of time and a lot of effort. And I'm glad it turned out well.
And it's being used.
It's being used. You know, to
continue,
you know?
Yeah, continue to be used for many, many, many events at Lake Whitney. And to, I'm sure it is very satisfying.
It is.
To
it
have is. Seen that pretty much from
the ground
from up. The ground up, really.
Yeah. From drawings up, I guess.
And I'm sure and I'm sure even going to a local church that you know has been looking for a building.
Yes.
Or been, man, we really need more Sabbath school rooms or anything like that, and being able to walk them, walk them through, assist them and support them. And then when it's all done, you know, you get a chance to go and
celebrate with them
see
and
see the ministry.
Yeah. It is. It is a blessing.
So remind me how many years have you been in this current job? I should ask that on the front side.
July is going to be 2 years.
2 years already. Wow.
But I feel like I've been here forever. So.
We have that. we joke sometimes working for the conference, working at the conference office. It's like dog years. But
yeah.
So any last thoughts? We always want to give our guests an opportunity before we get into the lightning round.
Okay.
One thing, if people ignore or have tuned out of everything we've talked about for the last number of minutes, what is the one takeaway you want our listeners to remember from our conversation?
So one of the things I want them to remember is the fact that we are here to help. We're not here to hinder any churches from, you know, purchasing or getting their own place. You know, our goal is to make sure that it's done correctly, and we're here to give them the support that they need. And, of course, it might seem challenging to some, but, you know, we're looking out for the best interests of the church.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Now we're going to do the lightning round.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
these are good. It's funny. My wife, Deborah, who you know well, she was trying to prompt me to give a couple of questions. She did want me to drop in, and that one thing you may not know about Brian is you ride a motorcycle.
Endeavors, man, I do, yes.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So, you know, it's always funny, you know, Endeavors like, oh, you're going to have Brian on. Talk about that. I'm like, yes, dear, we'll talk about the motorcycle. All right. Morning person or night owl?
I'm a morning person.
Like?
I get up early, like to get things.
Like early, know. Like 3 a.m., 4 a.m.? Like how early? Man.
I would say 5.
All right, 5?
Yeah. No, before 5. Let's say
before 5. Look at that. Now
my alarm goes off at 5, and I'm normally up before that. So.
Look, wow, you're one of those guys that the alarm doesn't even have to go off, and you're up before the alarm.
I mean, you know, I try to stay in bed, but that doesn't always work. You know how that goes.
It's because Vanessa's like, "Go, get up. It's time for you to get your stuff done." So then, morning, you get a lot of stuff done in the morning. Then before you come into work, or
I try to, you know, I feel when I get up in the morning, I feel more accomplished.
Okay.
Getting things organized, ready for the day.
Okay.
Yeah.
In bed by what time?
Man, I go to bed like 10, 11 o'clock.
Okay. No, well, if you're getting up at 4 or 5 in the morning, of course. Then, all right. All right. Second question, what is your favorite time of the year?
My favorite time of the year? Here in Texas is springtime.
Springtime.
Because it's not too hot and it's not too cold.
Yeah, you've lived a couple of different places that have all four seasons.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Here we say we have four seasons, but you know, we have winter and summer and a little bit of spring, a little bit of fall. But you like spring?
I do. I like spring.
It is a beautiful time here.
It is.
What is the most memorable trip you've ever taken?
The most memorable trip was last year, or year before last, me and Vanessa went to St. Vincent.
Oh.
Where her mom was from.
Okay.
You know, went, her uncle invited us over for, him and his wife were celebrating 25 years of marriage. So it was my first time over there. I think it was Vanessa's first time as well. But beautiful, beautiful, man. It's the turquoise water and the... Yeah, it's just nice. That was most memorable.
You could move there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'll move there.
You'll move there, not a problem. What is one thing on your bucket list?
Man.
One of the things. I mean, I'm sure you have a number of things on your bucket list, but one thing.
One thing on my bucket list? To visit Alaska.
Visit Alaska?
Yeah.
Never, so you've never been, you've only...
I've never been to Alaska.
All right. No. I figure a guy as well-traveled as you and has been to Alaska. So visiting Alaska, all right.
Yeah.
You want to do
just,
that?
Just to see, you know, what it's like and the glaciers and stuff like that.
The beauty. Mm-hmm. All right. I'll go with you.
Okay.
We'll go to Alaska.
There we go.
If you could have any animal as a pet, what would it be? Any animal. Doesn't have to be domesticated. Any animal.
I like tigers.
Going for the big cats, all right?
Yeah, the big cats.
Why?
Why? I don't know. They're just unique, you know, the patterns on their skin and the way they look.
And what they can just, eat. The way they can eat you in three bites or anything.
Well, I'm not thinking about that
You're
part
not
of it.
About,
no.
Right.
No.
So a tiger, okay, I can see. I'm not sure Vanessa would sign off on having a tiger, but
right,
hey,
right.
This is your podcast. We'll let you say whatever you want to say. Now, remind people, and I want to hit this at the top, and I forgot to do it. Remind people where you're originally from.
I'm originally from the St. Croix, U.S. Virgin Islands.
Okay.
Family, my parents are from St. Lucia, and they are descendants of India.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which St. Vincent, I mean, that whole Caribbean area,
yes,
St. Croix, St. Yes. Luke, beautiful area. Well, I've never been. Mm-hmm. That's on my bucket list of some of those islands in the Caribbean. Beautiful, beautiful area.
It is.
All right, last question. What is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Man, Tom, I've received a lot of advice.
I'm sure you have. I won't ask if all of it was good, but best piece of advice.
Off the top of my head, I can't think of one. I'm sorry.
All that advice, it all runs together. All right. Man, you're the first guest I've had that's really? Like, pass on that question.
I'll pass
have no.
On
all right.
Yeah.
Brian, you can tell we have a lot of fun. Brian, thank you for coming on here. Thank you so much for the ministry that you've done here. It's so great to be able to, every day that I'm in the office and that you're in the office, be able to see each other and hang out. And I'm always jealous of your hair, you know, especially you grow the man bun. I'm like, man, I wish I could do that. But you have some of the best hair. Even Deborah and I have talked about that. I was like, man, that would be some great hair to have. But again, thank you for coming on. Thank you for, again, the ministry that you have. And I want to thank all of you who are watching, listening, for joining us for another episode of Leadership 360 Podcast. Continue to subscribe where you get your podcast. If you want to watch the video on YouTube, the Texas Adventist channel, or wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast, we'd love to hear from you too. Leave a review. Let us know how you're doing, how things, if this is really meeting something that, you are feeling in the local church, whether it be here in the Texas Conference or around the world. And so thank you again for joining us. And we look forward to next month being able to continue to be the leaders that God has called us to be. Mm-hmm.
Leadership 360 is a Texas Conference of Seventh-day Adventist production. Our executive producers are Ken Dixon and Dr. Tom Grove. Our producers are Ever Sorto and Tammy Townsend. Our sound engineer is Aaron Metter, and video editor is Tammy Townsend. New episodes of Leadership 360 are released on the third Thursday of every month, so be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find the video version of this podcast on the Texas Conference YouTube. Thanks for listening.